Israel is fighting for its survival against Hamas to the south, Hezbollah to the north, and Iran to the east. And now, Israel's efforts to protect itself are being undermined by growing tensions between the U.S. and Israel. What is happening? That's our focus in this episode of Four Shadows Report. Welcome to Four Shadows Report. This is Steve Miller. The Israel-Gaza war has continued for several months now. Israel has had to deal with two challenges. First, terrorist enemies that want to wipe out the Jewish nation. And second, supposedly friendly nations that are making it difficult for Israel to bring an end to terrorism in the Middle East. The United States is one of those supposedly friendly nations. But we are seeing a consistent pattern of words that say one thing and actions that say another. In word, the U.S. says it supports Israel, but in action, it does things that support Israel's enemies. In this episode, we're going to look at what those actions are, and we will see how those actions are ultimately betraying Israel. On the website of the U.S. Department of State, an official fact sheet opens with these words: "The United States was the first country to recognize Israel as a state in 1948 and the first to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel in 2017. Israel is a great partner to the United States, and Israel has no greater friend than the United States." But in recent years, the United States has acted in ways that contradicts those words, and it has shown Israel that it is not such a great friend after all. Let's start by looking at the big picture. For 45 years now, those who rule Iran have been committed to what is called the Islamic Revolution. In a speech given in January 2024, just 3 months ago, Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei explained what this revolution involves. He said that Iran uses what he calls soft power for the purpose of establishing a global Islamic regime. This soft power is carried out through explanatory jihad. But there's nothing soft or explanatory about jihad. In Islam, the term jihad refers to holy war against non-Muslims. This jihad is carried out through terrorist proxies based in Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Yemen, Gaza, and the West Bank. These terrorist proxies form a ring of fire that surrounds Israel, and they are supported by Iran and committed to destroying Israel. In another speech 1 week later, Supreme Leader Khamenei stated the ultimate goal of this Islamic revolution. He said, "The resistance is alive, fresh, and prepared, and it must strike the enemy wherever necessary." He added that with God's help, the day will come when the Iranian nation and the Muslim people will witness the victory of patience, steadfastness, and faith against the enemies and Satans of the world. When he speaks of the Satans of this world, he is referring to the big Satan, which is the U.S., and the little Satan, which is Israel. And by enemies of the world, he means all non-Muslims. The Iranian regime's vision is for a world ruled by Islam. For decades, Iran has been determined to destroy Israel. A big part of its strategy has been the buildup of Hamas in Gaza, Hezbollah in Lebanon, military bases in Syria and Iraq, and the financial and military support of the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank. For the past few decades, everything we've heard about terrorist attacks against Israel can be traced back to Iran. Iran is like an octopus that uses its many tentacles to carry out terrorist strikes from all directions against Israel. A key part of Iran's strategy has been to build a nuclear weapons program. For years, Iran has steadily increased its capability and is now on the verge of becoming a nuclear weapons power. The International Atomic Energy Agency said that as of February 2024, it would take Iran only 3 weeks to enrich enough uranium to create 5 fission weapons. Then the process of developing the weapons themselves could take anywhere from several months to a year. For years, Iran has kept this nuclear development site's top secret, and it has refused to let the outside world supervise these sites. This is the same Iran that the U.S. has negotiated for the past 3 years, trying to reach a nuclear deal. The big question is this: why have these negotiations dragged on for so long? Because Iran has persistently chipped away at making sure all the terms in the deal are in their favor. In fact, at one point in the negotiation, a spokesman for Iran said that the deal depends on the U.S. meeting Iran's rightful demand. Long story short, over the course of the negotiations, the U.S. has given up many concessions to Iran. The White House and State Department are desperate to appease Iran because they want a deal that makes it look like the U.S. has helped to bring peace to the Middle East. But Iran is still holding out, and today the Middle East is falling apart, largely because the U.S. and other Western powers have failed to deal harshly with Iran and its terrorist proxies. With that as our background, let's look now at what's been happening in the war between Hamas and Israel, and let's see how the U.S. is betraying Israel through actions that clearly favor Hamas, Hezbollah, and ultimately Iran. First, the White House and State Department have pushed Israel to agree to a two-state solution. They are urging Israel to go along with the creation of a Palestinian state that coexists alongside Israel, and the U.S. has suggested that the Palestinian Authority be given control over this state. But that doesn't make sense, because the Palestinian Authority is a terrorist organization as well. Right now, the Palestinian Authority ruled most of the West Bank, and the West Bank has been a hotbed of terrorist activity for years. Just a couple weeks ago, an Israeli expert condemned the U.S. and said, "With all due respect to our U.S. ally, the Palestinian Authority will always be hostile to Israel, just like Hamas." Not even the Palestinians want a two-state solution. Palestinian leaders have rejected numerous two-state peace plans for nearly 80 years. And when Gaza was allowed to become its own Palestinian state in 2006, what did it do? Hamas turned Gaza into a terrorist base. Why? Because the Palestinians are determined to make the land all theirs, from the river to the sea. For the U.S. to pressure Israel to agree to a two-state solution favors Iran and its terrorist proxies. Second, the United States has helped to promote Palestinian propaganda that makes Israel look bad. The White House and the media have parroted Hamas's claims that excessive numbers of civilians are being killed by Israel. President Biden himself said the humanitarian situation in Gaza is unacceptable, and the world community has accused Israel of genocide. The Hamas Ministry of Health has claimed that more than 33,000 Palestinians have been killed in the war, and the U.S. has blindly accepted this number given by Hamas, even though no independent party can verify Hamas's claim. But on April 6th, the Hamas Ministry of Health admitted it has incomplete data on more than 10,000 of those deaths. You can also find articles online that explain why Hamas's death numbers are suspicious. But the biggest reason to be doubtful is that no independent sources in Gaza are able to back up just how many have died. And of course, Hamas wants inflated numbers in order to gain sympathy from other countries around the world. Recently, John Spencer, who is the chair of urban warfare studies at the Modern War Institute at West Point, was able to spend time on the ground in Gaza. And he confirms what Israel has been saying, that the ratio of civilian deaths to military deaths is roughly 1-to-1. That ratio is unheard of. Normally, it's more like 10-to-1, but the Israel Defense Forces have worked hard to keep civilian deaths to a minimum. After his visit to Gaza, Spencer said this, "By my analysis, Israel has implemented more precautions to prevent civilian harm than any military in history, above and beyond what international law requires, and more than the U.S. did in its wars in Iraq and Afghanistan." Spencer went on to say that the IDF has established a remarkable historic new standard, and yet the international community, and increasingly the United States, barely acknowledges this. In spite of these facts, the U.S. has condemned Israel for excessive deaths. It has helped Hamas to spread false information, and the spreading of this false narrative favors Hamas and Iran. Third, the White House and State Department have insisted that Israel not carry out a ground invasion against Hamas in Rafah. Rafah is a town along the Egyptian border. It's been a strategic spot for Hamas because that's where weapons are transported underground into Gaza for use by Hamas. Israel's goal is to completely destroy Hamas so that it can never threaten Israel again. But there are four battalions of Hamas terrorists hiding in Rafah. That could mean 4,000 to 5,000 soldiers. But the U.S. is pressuring Israel to abandon the war before it is finished. The U.S. is pressing for a ceasefire. And Hamas is going even further, demanding not only a ceasefire, but a complete withdrawal of all Israeli troops from Gaza. Here's the problem. As long as Hamas has control of Rafah, it will still remain in power, and it will have a lifeline to weapons and supplies that enable it to continue its fight. By telling Israel to stay out of Rafah, the U.S. is favoring Hamas and Iran. Fourth, when the United Nations passed a resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire in Gaza, the U.S. refused to veto the resolution. This means the U.S. was saying it agreed with the call for a ceasefire. It agreed that Israel should stop defending itself against bloodthirsty terrorists. This was a vote for Hamas, and ultimately, a vote for Iran. The U.S. has had a long history of standing with Israel when the United Nations condemns Israel. But this time, when the United Nations condemned Israel, the U.S. refused to vote in favor of Israel. This meant the U.S. was voting in favor of Hamas. The U.S. was saying that Israel should stop its efforts to deal with Palestinian terrorists. Fifth, the United States has offered to build a pier on the shoreline of Gaza for delivering humanitarian aid. The U.S. has asked the nation of Qatar to oversee the building of the pier. What's bizarre about this is that Qatar is a supporter of Hamas. It is a supplier of weapons to Hamas. Several of Hamas's top leaders are hiding out in Qatar right now, and the U.S. has agreed to let the pier be built by a company that is controlled by Hamas. This means every aspect of the pier's development and management will be under Hamas control. It also means that all the food and humanitarian supplies will end up in Hamas's hands. Another danger of this pier is that it will allow supplies to be shipped into Gaza without Israeli supervision, which provides a new means of smuggling weapons into Gaza. Sixth, the United States wants the Netanyahu government to collapse. It wants to remove from office a leader elected by the Israeli people themselves. Just 1 month ago, in March 2024, U.S. Senate leader Chuck Schumer criticized the way Prime Minister Netanyahu is handling the war. Schumer then called for the people of Israel to hold new elections so that Netanyahu can be replaced. And when one of Netanyahu's former political opponents made an unauthorized visit to the U.S., this opponent had meetings at the White House. This gave the appearance that the White House was showing support for Netanyahu's former opponent, again in an effort to undermine Netanyahu's government. In plain language, this is election interference. It is the people of Israel who voted for Netanyahu, and the U.S. has no business telling a democratic nation to change its leadership just because the U.S. doesn't like what that leader is doing. 7. There is a growing number of Democrats in the U.S. Congress who are demanding that the U.S. stop selling arms to Israel. And even the White House itself has hinted that because it doesn't agree with what Israel is doing in Gaza, it may cut back on its shipments of weapons to Israel. Once again, this favors Hamas as well as Iran. 8. Just a few days ago, the U.S. State Department approved the potential sale of aircraft support and training to Iraq. And back in January 2024, the U.S. agreed to sell Turkey 40 new F-16 fighter jets and to help upgrade 79 other. Iraq is largely controlled by Iran. Turkey is growing into a stronger ally of Iran. So in both cases, the U.S. is helping Israel's enemy to increase and upgrade their military air power that is sure to be used against Israel someday. 9. And most recently, after Iran fired more than 300 drones and missiles at Israel, and after 99% of those weapons were intercepted, President Biden urged Israel to take the win and not carry out a counterstrike. Biden further stated that if Israel took any action against Iran, the U.S. would not support Israel. Very clearly, the president was communicating that when Iran strikes Israel, Israel can't strike back. Who does that favor? Again and again, actions taken by the White House and State Department have undermined Israel. They have forcefully told Israel what it should do when it's obvious the U.S. does not understand the dynamics of what is really happening in the Middle East. At the same time that the U.S. has claimed to support Israel, its actions have actually betrayed Israel. While the U.S. has helped Israel defensively, that's where the help stops. The U.S. is not doing anything to tangibly reduce the threat of terrorism in the Middle East. As long as Iran and its proxies exist, and as long as they are allowed to have their weapons, the Middle East will never experience peace. The actions I've described demonstrate that the rift between the U.S. and Israel is increasing. Now, this isn't true for all of the U.S. We still have government leaders who clearly support Israel, and polls show that a large number of Americans stand with Israel. But at the top levels of government, we are seeing a growing level of betrayal on the part of the U.S. And Genesis 12:3 promises that there are consequences for those who place themselves on the wrong side of Israel. All through history, God has stayed true to his promises in Genesis 12:3. Those who bless Israel will be blessed, and those who curse Israel will be cursed. God said those are forever promises. And ever since Ezekiel 38 was penned 2,600 years ago, we've known there is coming a day when no country will back Israel. A massive invasion will come out of the north. The beginning of Ezekiel 38 lists the names of the nations that will carry out this attack. They will include Russia, Iran, and Turkey. And we are told in Ezekiel 38 that some countries will object to the invasion, but they will not come to Israel's rescue. This includes the U.S., and that is the direction we see the U.S. heading. Ezekiel 38 tells us that when this invasion happens, God alone will save Israel. He will completely destroy Israel's enemies. It will be obvious to the world that God intervened on Israel's behalf. In Ezekiel 38:23, God says, "I will show my greatness and my holiness and make myself known in the eyes of many nations. Then they will know that I am the Lord." The promises God made in Genesis 12:3 are forever promises. God will never betray Israel. In Jeremiah 33:25, God said, "I would no more reject my people than I would change my laws that govern night and day, earth and sky." God's promises to Israel are as fixed as the laws of nature. Nothing will cause his promises to fail. And in Romans 11:1, the Apostle Paul wrote, "As God rejected his people, by no means. The very fact Israel exists today is a testimony to God's faithfulness. And no matter what happens next in the Middle East, we know that God will stand with Israel. Thank you for joining me for Foreshadows Report. My hope is that you found this podcast informative for getting a better understanding of what is happening today in the Middle East. Each week, I come out with a new podcast, and between seasons, I'll do replays of the most popular episodes. And if you're interested in receiving news updates from me daily, you can go to Telegram Messenger channel and subscribe to Foreshadows Report. Or you can go to my website, stevemillerresources.com, then scroll down to the bottom of the home page, and you'll see a link there to my Telegram post. And if you're interested in websites that offer solidly biblical teaching about Bible prophecy, you'll want to go to harvestprophecyhq.com. That's harvestprophecyhq.com. When you see the menu at the top of the screen, click on the word blog. That will take you to several dozen excellent articles about Bible prophecy and more. Once again, thank you for joining me, and I am grateful to Harvest House Publishers for supporting this podcast.